You know where your business would be without you. Imagine where it could go with more of you. Well, with Wix, you can create a website with more of your vision, your voice, your expertise. Wix gives you the freedom to truly own your brand and do it on your own, with full customization and advanced AI tools that help turn your ideas into reality. Scale up without being held back by cookie-cutter solutions and grow your business into your online brand. Because without you, your business is just business as usual. Take control. Go to Wix.com.
You set the gold standard for your business. Your website should do the same. Wix puts you at the helm so you can enjoy the creative freedom of designing your site just the way you want. Want someone to bounce your ideas off? Talk with AI to create a beautiful site together. Generate on-brand content, images, media, and simply change or fine-tune any of it along the way. Whatever your business, manage it from one place and tie it all together with a personalized domain name. Gear up for success with a brand that says you best. You can do it yourself on Wix.
Welcome back to Directly Current. I'm Max Patton, and this is the podcast all about EV policy and US politics, American jobs, all that goodness to do with electric vehicles. This week, I'm speaking with Stable, a company that is hell-bent on making EV charging a profitable business, because right now, for many actors, it isn't. But Stable wants to change that with a data analytics platform that helps the supply side actually understand what price they should make their charging, how they should interact with demand and energy and utility costs. Stable's hoping that their network and their data will make it a lot easier for businesses and places that you rely on for charging to actually make money and keep doing what they're doing, and ideally build more chargers. It's a foundational element, of course, of the EV transition. And I'm so happy to speak with Rohan Puri, who's the co-founder and CEO of the company. So without further ado, I'll let him introduce himself.
My name is Rohan Puri. I'm the co-founder and CEO of Stable. Stable's mission is very simple. Our only goal is to make EV charging a profitable business. And I think that day has come a lot sooner than most people would have planned, but the economic pressures are there. We do, basically the way that we help charging networks is we help them place their chargers in strategically strong locations where they're going to see a lot of utilization. And then we help price those chargers with a dynamic pricing algorithm, essentially helps based on driver demand and energy costs, optimize what the price of charging should be. Our belief is that if you place chargers well and you price them well, that's about 80% of the way to building a profitable charging site. Of course, they need to work. They need to generally be available for use, but it's all about convenience and price for most drivers, and the networks that are best at that are going to win. Yeah. Stable's been around for about 8 years now. We're a Series A stage company. We're spun out of MIT's Media Lab, my co-founder and I. And our whole focus, again, is in using data to make these better investment decisions.
Yeah, it's an awesome mission. You guys have been executing really well. One thing just to put in mind for people who aren't aware, the current status quo of EV charging usually is not profitable. So do you have any like rough guidelines or data on what are some of the failures of like existing EV charging without, you know, dense sites like yours?
Yeah, typically what you're looking for in an EV charging station is that it's utilized about 15% of the day to pay back on its initial cost. So to give you an idea, a DC fast charger, like a supercharger equivalent, that hardware for just one stall costs about $100,000, $150,000. Mm-hmm. If you're putting in 10 stalls at a location, it's $1 million to $2 million of capital that you have to pay back. Now, the energy costs a lot too. Typically, an EV charger, you charge an end driver, like for a fast charger, about 45 cents per kilowatt hour. The energy cost can be 25 cents in some locations. It can be 42 cents in some locations. In some places, it can be 70 or 80 cents. And it really depends on how the utility is charging you. So the vast majority of charging stations today are below that 15% utilization mark. We'd estimate around 70% of chargers today are below that mark. And so not only do you have to make sure the utilization is high enough, but when people do use your charger, you have to make sure that margin is high enough to pay back on that $1.5 million to $2 million of capital that is going into that charger. So just like any renewable asset class or many asset classes, this is a relatively low margin, high volume business. Just like fueling, right? Gas fueling. So as with any low margin, high volume business, you just have to be a lot more clever about how you operate that business.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the site selection aspect, there's the pricing aspect. And just from the consumer point of view, I know price, people are very sensitive to that because for a while, electricity rates were very cheap. And now as companies pivot to trying to be profitable, trying to somewhat reverse that equation so that it can make sense. You're seeing dynamic pricing used more often, depending on, of course, the time of the day, the utilization rate, the location it's in. But a station model, I think everyone's familiar with driving by and seeing the price chart listed. Do you think there's a role that, you know, your company has or there is in the market towards a perception of, okay, pricing can be dynamic, it's going to change depending on where I go, when I go? How do you think that comes about?
Yeah, pricing is already quite dynamic today for pretty much every other category. We expect prices to change at gas stations. We expect that when you book an Uber at rush hour, it's going to be more expensive. We expect that when you book a hotel last minute, it's going to be more expensive. So this is already a strategy being implemented in these, again, relatively low margin, high volume businesses. It's just a supply and demand dynamic. I think it's great that EV charging stations had flat fees for most of their useful life. That's fine. But eventually, like if the price of the energy is changing 15x throughout the day, 6 p.m. versus 6 a.m., then I feel like the price should also be changing. And so I would ask for those who are a little bit more resistant to this sort of dynamic pricing strategy, the problem with it is both ways, right? With a flat fee, sure, you may be saving money at times when the price is really expensive, but you're also losing money. There's a much bigger margin at the times when the energy cost is less expensive. And I think you should be rewarded. If you're willing to charge at 4 a.m. overnight or charge at a time when it's not very busy, I think you should be rewarded for that fact. And likewise, if you're very desperately in need of a charge at a peak time when demand is highest and the energy cost is highest, then of course you would expect to pay more for that. Instead, what we're seeing is that there's this, like, in the spirit of preserving cost to make it an EV, fueling an EV cheaper than fueling a gas vehicle, what we're seeing is all these like behind the scenes behaviors around chargers that throttle your EV charging, for example, to preserve energy costs. They'll slow down your charge because they want to shave those demand peaks that they're going to have to pay the utility. I'd say it should be something pretty different, actually. What if instead of that, you're at a 350 kilowatt charger, and instead of getting throttled to 100 kilowatts to preserve that the charging network's energy costs, what if we give you the option? Yeah, you can charge at 350 kilowatts, but I'm going to charge you a lot for that. I'm going to charge you $1 a kilowatt hour. So if you're really desperate in need of charging, you have that option. Or if you're instead, you're willing to let me throttle you down to 100 or 50 kilowatts, then I'll pass off a significant discount to you, 20, 25 cents. But now the consumer has choice versus being throttled behind the scenes. And I think that's the appeal here. So if this industry is going to survive, like this is one of the clear things that every industry does, and this industry will have to do too.
Absolutely. And, you know, the customers, of course, are still coming to grips with what a kilowatt hour is. I imagine also lots of your clients are the people who are deploying stations and who want to have some more insights into them. So how much of your company's mission is actually just educating your potential clients on units and the science and the vocabulary of charging? Or do you try to simplify that? How does that work?
We don't necessarily do much there. We leave that to the discretion of the charging network. We're just helping the charging network understand what is the expected cost of the energy. You'd be surprised how, even on the charging network side, to determine, it is actually really complicated for a charging network to understand what is the cost of this next kilowatt hour of energy, this next packet of energy I'm about to dispense. What does this kilowatt hour cost me? And the reason it's so complicated is it depends. Did you hit your demand charge for that week? Are the other chargers also charging right now at the same time as you? So that kilowatt hour is effectively more expensive to you. And so even the language to a charging network is confusing and can be complicated. But generally speaking, we leave that up to the interface that the driver is using, whoever is building that, whether it's an in-car nav or it's a plug share app or it's a charging network specific app. I think their responsibility is to convey that in a way that's simple and easy to understand. It isn't as easy as a gallon, and there's no way to simplify it. Like, the energy costs are a more complicated beast. That said, I do think that where I see the future of this going is that the car will help you with this decision. And it already is, but we're thinking about it in terms of future of gas station you mentioned, or the signage out front with the price. And I think that's really important. But remember that charging infrastructure is all internet connected and all digital from the start. And so in that situation, shouldn't the car just be deciding for you on route where to charge that is the best price and convenience, and you just say approve or disagree and to try again? I think in a future, especially when it's autonomous and electric, the car will just make that decision for you and simplify that decision for you.
I completely agree with the theory there. And seeing some vehicles do route planning really well, obviously it's easier for the Teslas of the world who vertically integrate this more. But you're still seeing like many vehicles maybe integrate, for instance, ChargePoint and that CPO's online status, but not Electrify America or vice versa. And so it's still such a fragmented ecosystem. So is there kind of an element of like all the players, your company included, trying to work to standardize this more? Or is it just a matter of automakers don't want to pay up for insights into the data, you know, the real-time status of stations? What's the holdup between getting that more standardized?
I think this is my opinion, maybe completely wrong, right? But what I've observed is that the networks still see themselves as extremely differentiated. They say that like EVgo or Electrify America or whatever, the BP or Shell network, right? That these networks, they see their like their network, their chargers are much better than the other ones, and they want to preserve that ecosystem. So they have memberships that you can sign up for. They have a dedicated in-app experience. And as soon as they open up the availability of their chargers to other providers, even if it's other charging networks, of course, that's a competitive problem. But if it's like a neutral entity that just makes a charging app and software that's in the vehicle, that sort of opens their hand to the fact that they're recognizing that their businesses could be a commoditized one. Does a user really care that they're on the EVgo charger, the Electrify America charger, or the Shell charger? I don't think so. I think they just choose the most conveniently best price charger that works and is available, right? You don't care about fueling at Exxon or Shell that much unless you have some insane discount, right? Think of it this way. If you're a charging network, I think you want as many people coming to your charging location as possible. So the natural economic pressure is to open up the availability of your charger on all the platforms so that everyone can find your charger and understand if it's available. And you do that because I, as a driver, would much rather go to a site where I know there's an available charger than to a site where I don't know what the availability is at all. And those sites will be more successful. So I think the sooner the CPOs give in to this, like they have in Europe, for example, it's very open and there's lots of EMSP apps and things like that. The sooner they do that, the better their utilization rates are going to improve. And I think they have to give up on this idea that they may be commoditized in the future. Eventually, it could very well be. And so you better just choose the best locations and prices because that's really what it's going to come down to.
Yeah. And in addition to them being commoditized, do you think there's an opportunity there for some decentralization? Like I know some of your clients like Blink, you know, are solutions for customers who want an easy to deploy charger. You don't have to be the Shell or the Exxon of tomorrow or an Electrify America today, you know, by a Dieselgate settlement. You can instead just be a business owner or someone who does something completely unrelated to EVs who wants an EV charger. Do you think in that sense, there's more opportunity for smaller fish to kind of play this and offer chargers, especially at a time where lots of chargers are scarce in most of the country?
100%. I think in fueling, we saw it as a franchise model where there would be smaller players who are still running gas stations and convenience stores, and it's still their main source of income. But I think in this market, we're also seeing in EV charging, we're seeing something different where their main source of revenue may never be EV charging. This is like Walmart and 7-Eleven and Racetrack. And these are site hosts, right? Their primary business is something else. And their motivation for having EV charging is likely to drive in-store sales more than anything else. So in that world, what they're optimizing for can be a little bit different. It's maybe not paying back on the charging hardware. Of course, they want to do that. But it's like, how do you drive the price, a price point that is interesting to a driver and a routing algorithm that drives in-store traffic and promos and get additional customer loyalty? So right now, about 50% of the market in terms of number of ports is owned by this very long tail of individual site hosts. So these are everyone from a donut shop in a mall to a large fast food chain, where their primary business is not EV charging. It's something else. But they buy chargers from ChargePoint and EV Connect and Blink and these hardware software providers. But actually, their primary income stream is not EV charging. And I think that trend will remain true because it's easier to host an EV charger than it is to host a gas station on your property, right?
Yeah. And I think that, income stable, right, in something like that, because you hear lots of horror stories about people who try to deploy this and it doesn't work very well, whether, they don't have the right service contract or when it is online, people aren't using it the right way. They have no idea what to set that pricing at. And it just creates these weird cycles. I mean, I myself, as just an EV driver, I will come into a town and if someone has a charge point they've set up is 20 cents a kilowatt hour, maybe on a lark or a mistake, that one is, of course, everyone's lining up to go to that one. And meanwhile, there's maybe a four stall somewhere else that are not being used completely. And that's obviously a bad problem on both the demand and the supply end. So how does your software help with that process?
And you're saying, how does our software help with like managing queuing and things like that?
Yeah, we'll manage queuing, but also ideally avoiding that by just maybe leading to better site selection and pricing and basically the variables that someone can control about like my locations, will I put chargers at? How many chargers will I put there? Those kinds of insights. Is that part of what Stable offers?
Yeah, exactly. It seems relatively simple, right? Just tell me which site's going to get the most traffic. But it's a lot more nuanced than that. And you can have a site that is likely to see, we might predict in our software, this address is likely to see a ton of traffic. Like a lot of EV drivers are going to like this, high value utilization above 15%, et cetera, et cetera. But you might be in a place where the utility costs are so unfavorable, especially at the time. So you're going to see a lot of traffic, but it's all going to happen between 4 p.m. and 8 p.m. And it just so happens that in that utility region, that's also where the cost of energy is the highest. And so while you have a ton of traffic and a ton of utilization, actually the margin is so low that you either have to raise prices so much that you're priced out of the market or you'll never pay back on those assets in any useful lifetime. So there's a lot of nuance to, it's not just figuring out how many people are going to show up. It's when are they going to show up and how much power are they going to pull in that time? Are you going to see mainly fleet users or regular drivers? And that all has that balance. So what Stable is trying to do is figure all that out in one click, right? So you just type in an address. We're trying to answer all those three questions and get you to a number, which is ROI, right? What is the return on investment of this charging location going to be? And it's very financially focused because in other domains, we do the exact same thing. Before you deploy a solar site, you do an analysis of how much sunlight is going to drop here. Is it going to be cloudy? Is there going to be occlusions that are going to block my panels at certain times? You know, what's my payback period going to be? The same with a wind farm. We do this already. So that's one way we do it. But I think that the other thing that we do is understand like what is the willingness to pay in that region and what is the price that we think you can charge conceivably at that site and what times would you charge that to help you optimize it. So far, most charging infrastructure has been deployed where it's easiest to deploy. So where is there power and where do we have lease agreements in place already? And hopefully we can pull a permit very easily. But I think the shift, especially as in 2025 with the disappearance of some of these subsidies, is really just around like where is it most profitable to deploy that charging infrastructure and where are we going to see this return on investment? So it's a different class of people now. It's different investors instead of pure green funders. And I think it's a good thing for the industry in general to get to that level of maturity.
To your point on like 2025 and the existence of the incentives between you have 30C, you have NEVI, some of the stuff in federally looks in question right now. Just basically there's a very dynamic environment going on there. Nonetheless, like the power companies, the municipal companies, the states, the local level, there's lots of other kind of funding and incentive programs. So do you think there's an option too for this patchwork of different grants and things people can apply for? Can that be made simpler too of understanding like, oh, how can I actually get this money that might be on the table that's only specific to this county or this utility, like seeing that more visually?
I think so. And in fact, in our software, you can actually get for that address, we'll show you all the incentive programs that we know about that apply to that location. So if it's in a disadvantaged area or if it's in a state or utility territory, like we can pull those down for you. That patchwork already exists and will continue to exist, obviously in varying degrees, depending on the state and the utility. I think that the thing that we've seen shift, though, is that there were CPOs who were only deploying where there's incentive programs. And now we might see that shift away where they say, okay, it's a nice to have, it's a cherry on top, it's icing on the cake to get some funding, but it's not our primary strategy, just given the uncertainty in that market.
That's all the more reason to want it to be sustainable in the first place. And part of that may come with, you mentioned, you know, the huge hardware costs sometimes associated with a station, particularly if you want to do the DC fast charging route. And within DC fast charging, do you deploy a 50 kilowatt station? May have some value still, not a ton, but definitely lots of people driving slower vehicles. Maybe a site like Costco where there's longer dwell time makes more sense versus something that's much more higher power and more state of the art. And if there's level 2 and AC charging, which is hugely important, a lot of the ecosystem and people who charge at work or charge in multi, you know, unit residences. So do you see any interesting trends basically in the cost of the hardware changing between DC fast charging, level 2, or the whole gamut, like some interesting trends that you're noticing from that?
Yeah, I think what we focus on is mainly on the DC fast charging. think level two is already at a point of maturity, right, where you can buy a level two charger on Amazon and get it installed by your local electrician fairly easily. Larger numbers at a multi-unit dwelling or an airport and things like that, of course, you're going to need something more substantial, but it has already reached sort of the cost threshold where it's, yeah, let's throw it down and see what happens. DC fast, of course, the prices are scaling down. The number of SKUs from manufacturers is decreasing and the hardware is getting more reliable. I know there's a lot of unreliable chargers still out there, but the natural forces here are such that they are getting better. And it's just going to take some time for it to get at the rate that I think everybody's happy with. That said, one trend that we're seeing is, again, we're seeing the emergence of more of these more very financially oriented charging groups who have done other types of DER work or financing work in other asset classes like solar and LEDs and wind farms, and are now seeing this opportunity in EV charging where they can get similar levels of return at a reduced risk in the sense that there are enough EVs on the road today. So one thing I remember hearing from one of our customers actually is, which I found was very simple and obvious, but was put really well, was as vehicle technology improves, like the batteries get bigger and they can store more energy and they can charge faster, the value of a DC fast charger holds much better than the value of a level two charger. Mm-hmm. And so if you're thinking it purely financially, or thinking about it purely financially in a portfolio of assets that you want to be valuable, just remember that a level two charger, which is essentially capped at how fast it can be, that value decreases over time much more significantly as the vehicles get better. It's not like the vehicles have reached their maximum capacity and this is that much charge they can store. No, they're able to store more power and they're able to charge faster. And a slow charger that's locked in its rate is just much less valuable to the average user. And that asset won't last the full 10 years that you want it to.
That's a great point. But I also see like maybe there's more of a divergence in the EV ecosystem at this point where you have a class of vehicles still that are from the 2010s and on, Chevy Bolts, Nissan Leafs, right? They're capable of maybe 50 kilowatt charging with, you know, not fast replenishing cars. Compare that with something like the state of the art coming out, the Lucid Airs, a Silverado EV, something else. You have vehicles that are much more demanding. They get much more range. They can replenish their batteries much quicker. There's an argument to be made that, like, you know, being both of those groups is they're almost different kinds of issues. So do you think like extent that there's growth in the DC fast charging market? It looks like, okay, serving more of the existing early adopters with the slower vehicles, looking ahead to the future, and okay, maybe it'll take a little more to pay off. Like, what are some of the trends of investment and basically how high do you go? How high power do you go? To what market do you cater EVs?
Right now, what we're seeing, and this is very anecdotal, but we're generally not seeing anyone deploy chargers slower than 150 kilowatts. They're always looking at 150 plus. And while there are a lot of Leafs and Bolts still out there, again, they're trying to build these assets in the way that they're going to be useful for their 10-year asset lifetime. And it's very painful to upgrade these things and rip them out again. And there is hardware out there that's easier to upgrade, but it's still quite tough. They want an asset that's going to be set it and forget it, valuable for the next 10 years optimally. And the higher they go, the better at it. Now, there's a little bit of a cutoff we tend to see at 350 and 400 kilowatts where there's just so much more hardware needed at that speed that you end up taking like more parking spots up and more space and the trenching is different. And you get again to this cost benefit that doesn't necessarily pencil. But yeah, the trend that we're seeing is definitely not lower than 125, 150. We don't see, actually, I can't even name a single customer of ours who's deploying 50 kilowatt chargers at this point.
Yeah. And that's interesting because I've had some anecdotal conversations about people who, maybe just the EV nerds among us are like, well, 50 kilowatts would be a nice speed for the kind of situation like a movie theater or a Costco where you're there an hour to 2 hours. And I've speculated about this, and it does seem like the marginal cost to go from 50 kilowatts to today's technology of 150 or higher, you know, denser per cabinet just seems like a much smarter equation given that most EVs are going to take advantage of that. So in that sense, do you see a future where maybe there's, okay, fixed capability hardware, but maybe more flexible options? Like your point earlier, you brought up like, okay, do I charge with this higher demand peak and pay more for that or charge a little slower? I mean, that's not something I've seen yet, but do you think that's on the horizon of like more flexibility and the charging speed that customers can use?
100%. I think one of the most frustrating experiences for any EV driver is going to a charger and it not charging at full speed when you really want it to charge at full speed. And sometimes they say it's the battery chemistry and blah, the heat. And sure, there is definitely some of that. But most of the time, it's really just to preserve the cost profile for the CPO. So I see that as a very clear and obvious way to drive. If a customer is willing to pay extra to get the fastest possible charge, let them have that flexibility and let them pay for what that is worth. And if they don't think it's worth that cost, they won't pay for it. It's easy to slow a charger down and save costs that way, but it's not easy to speed it up. And most of the time when you're charging network, deploying a new site, you are getting a utility upgrade at that location, and you're sizing that utility upgrade to build for the future anyways. So even if you're going to put in 150 kilowatt chargers and you put, let's say, four at a location, you only need 600 kilowatts in that case, but you still upgraded the utility to a megawatt and a half just to future-proof it for later. So the capacity is there. It's just which hardware are you choosing to put down? And most of the time, the bias is, let's just put hardware in there that's future-proof, and then we can always slow it down with software if we need to. We can't speed it up.
There's the other end of, you know, the capacity, which is frustrating. Like, you know, want a charger that's derated to work faster. And also, mentioned this earlier briefly, but the queuing issue, right? Where lots of sites that are in high demand, whether it's parking, whether it's the utility, whatever the rate limiting factor is, let's say they only have two dispensers, or maybe one, or one's not working. And so that creates this bottleneck situation, and it's frustrating, and it might be inevitable in some kind of urban congestion. But do you think there's a way to that friction less for both the user and, of course, for the site, so that it can really see more parallel throughput and fewer people waiting around in line?
Yeah, I think there is. Congestion management is going to be an increasingly important factor. We see it already in holiday periods all the time. There's always a news article about some Tesla site that is just packed. But one of the keys to managing congestion is to increase prices, right? Frankly, that's how we do it, right? When something is too popular, you raise the price to the point where it's reasonably saturated, and you go from there. And as long as people have heads up on that, I think when people hear dynamic pricing, they tend to think like it's real-time responsive. And that's actually not what Stable is doing right now. Stable tends to, for almost everybody that we're helping with on this, is we're updating prices once a week for the week ahead. So knowing that it's a holiday and knowing that it's Thanksgiving week, and on Thursday last year, we saw a ton of traffic and queuing, what's going to be our modification of that strategy this year to make it better? And as long as somebody can plan around it, it shouldn't be a frustrating experience to manage around. In fact, it should be better because there's less queuing, right?
It's not the Uber surge, right? You're at the airport and it's a really busy 20 minutes. It's more of the, like, your power company post a fixed schedule of what the utility rates are, and you can go around that. I think that makes sense. But still, like, I think about these instances, let's say it's, I don't know, a Taylor Swift concert or some kind of sports game or something, right? There's going to be cases where there's going to be extremely high congestion. So do you see more of a real-time model in the future being useful, especially for certain sites and maybe certain customers?
I do think so. I think we're going to see more real-time pricing coming through. It's going to get that right, you really need to have the interface to the driver to be strong. Like, before you show up to the charger, they should know what price to expect. That's the key. And I don't think that really exists yet as clearly as it does for Tesla, for example. Tesla vehicles, in fact, there's some places in Germany today where there's live digital signage that show the prices changing on the Tesla network. And we don't necessarily see that many other places. Now, in California, there's a weights and measures board that is enforcing this sort of transparency, at least on the screen of the charger, and even better to have external signage to indicate that. But I do think it's inevitable. It is the price of the energy is variable. The underlying price of the energy is variable. Every single hour of the day, it's a little bit different. So if that's the case, then, you know, the consumer, if in a game of margins, the consumer should be the benefit from that, or should feel the strain of that price change.
No, it goes back to the dynamic pricing, surprisingly powerful lever. I mean, I'm continually amazed when, you know, it's priced super low and people are surprised there's congestion, but that is an ongoing problem today. This question here is, you know, there's a lot of things working in your favor, right? There's the EV technology advancing, the batteries getting better, the cost to deploy dispensers, and these fixed site allocation costs going down, more interested customers. And yet, I mean, there's obviously challenges in broader EV adoption in some situations. So lastly, like, what do you see as a big picture challenge that Stable, you know, hoping to solve in the next, like, a 3 to 5 year horizon?
Yeah, I think one of the major things is, I think I mentioned it earlier, is like, it's unclear what the current cost per kilowatt hour is for the next kilowatt hour you're about to dispense of the charger. And I think people just aren't that sophisticated yet in modeling that as charging networks. Once you get that, then you can start to drive that change upwards to the pricing side. One of the things that I'd love to unlock is eventually it's a game of margins, right? Eventually the margins start to get tighter and tighter. We know from oil and gas that tinier margins tend to be forcing function for other types of programs like retail sales. And they, you always hear like the Coke is more valuable than the gasoline that they've fueled. And that's how those businesses survive. We're certainly not at that state yet for EV charging. EV charging is not as profitable as oil and gas is. And we'd never complain about how much money Exxon has made. And most of these guys are facing these financial headwinds. So first of all, we need to get it to break even. Once we get it to break even, there are new revenue streams you can tap into that have to do with customer loyalty. So we talked about how roughly 50% of the market is owned by this long tail of site hosts. And that is definitely true. But the point is, like, how do we drive in-store sales? If I offer you a discounted charging experience, if you buy a coffee at the Starbucks next door, how much is Starbucks willing to pay for that to get you into their store? And that unlocks a massive opportunity for these CPOs. And I think it's an added benefit for the driver as well, who wants this additional amenity as they wait for their charge.
Seeing this somewhat at the automaker level, like there's the Mercedes charge points. I know in Europe, they have the Porsche ones, which, you know, customers obviously buy into a brand and an ethos. And so they sell them, I don't know, merchandise and the branding and the value of like these bespoke charging lounges. And there's probably much more mass market ways to do that, selling Coke, car washes, I don't know what, but I'm sure no shortage of stuff. Really exciting. Thanks so much for your time, Rohan, today. Everyone who's a potential interested site host to check out Stable. You guys have a great domain. It's stable.auto. We'll put that in the show notes, but thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it, Max.
All right, that's it for this week of Directly Current. We'll be back in 2 weeks from now. And we'll be recording at Las Vegas at the EV Charging Expo. So if you're there, come and see us. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. Please do subscribe to the future episodes anywhere you get your podcast. That can be YouTube, that can be Apple Podcasts, Spotify, etc. We're on all of them. Links are in the show notes. And of course, do check out Stable if you are a business owner or someone who might be interested in deploying EV chargers. And of course, if you like data, you gotta go to evpolitics.org because we here at the American EV Jobs Alliance have been compiling a lot of interesting analysis on the public's reaction to Elon Musk, Tesla, electric vehicles at large, and all of it in this very interesting moment where we're selling Teslas at the White House and EVs are being bought by Republicans to own the libs. It's crazy times. And there's so much more work to do, but we can't wait to share all of it with you. In the meantime, of course, Directly Current, this podcast will return again in 2 weeks with that episode from the EV Charging Expo in Las Vegas. I've been Max Patton. See you again in 2 weeks.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.